This is a podcast for Radio Sangam, the number one followed Asian community radio station in the UK.
Full inbox this morning, got a publishing contract, so I'm really over the moon about that. Man flu on the one hand, but a publishing contract on the other. So, I've got my guest with me, and I'm going to try and get your name in one go now. Veronica Wusubichowska.
Yeah,
I want to come back to Ghana, right?
Oh, yes.
Now, I think you said you were classed as, is it Mamsa, the youngest?
Mansa.
And this is the Twi language.
Twi.
Is it Twi?
It's Twi.
It is Twi.
Twi. Twi.
Twi.
Oh, yes, that's
so
it.
So not a T, it's a Ch, Twi.
Yes, even though it's spelled with a T-W-I.
It's
pronounced Twi.
Twi, yes. Okay. So I know how to say, and I think I can get this right because you helped me. Now, she's looking at me now like a horror story because I don't think she's spoken this for some time. But today's your day.
Okay.
Hey. So I'm gonna give it a go. I know I can say etezen.
Yeah,
etezen. Etezen.
Yes, etezen. You know, the accent. Etezen.
Etezen. Mm. Which is how are you?
Yes. Muhuya.
Muhuya. Muhuya. And what does that mean?
I'm fine.
And a lot of the words begin with M, I noticed, when I'd spoken to people in the past.
Yeah, you can have some, yeah, with M.
And then it's quite a mix, really, when you look at Polish. Every word's a Z or a Z.
Oh, boy. If we're going to enter the Polish language, that's actually one of the most difficult languages. I was learning Polish, when I went to Poland, I had to kind of immerse myself into the language because I didn't speak it that well.
Your mother's Polish, right?
Yes, she is.
So you grew up with English and Twi.
Yeah, well, mainly English because, you know, in Ghana, the official language is English.
Right.
Yes? So that's what is used everywhere. And so my first contact was with the language, with the English language. So, yes.
Okay. So what difficulties did you find when it came to trying to speak Polish?
Polish has a really complex grammatical structure. Each ending ends differently depending on the situation, depending on what you're trying to say. My name, for example, has different endings depending on the situation. For example, if somebody's calling me, yes, and because it's a call, they wouldn't say, oh, Veronica, they'll say, oh, Veronico, you know, oh, at the end, just because it's being called out.
Okay.
Or if I'm giving you something or to Veronica, you'd say, do Veroniki. You know, so we have E, O, L.
So I think this comes from like old, like Latin nominative, dative, accusative and all that sort of business.
Most likely.
Yeah. Years ago, I used to go out with a Greek lady and she used to call me Martin Moo. You put Moo at the end, it means my Martin.
Yes. In Polish, it's so similar. Mui is my. So,
yeah.
Yes.
And then my good male friend, I call him Kalego.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, Kalego.
But
yes.
I think that you would be Koleżanka.
Koleżanka.
Which that takes me back to the communist days because it sounds like colleague, doesn't it? It's like,
yes.
What's that thing that they used to say in Russian? Comrade. It sounds almost like comrade, you know?
I'm sure the origins of all these words have a root from, and that's why they sound similar.
Yeah. So when you were in Ghana, right, you know, you were there for the first 19 years of your life.
Yes.
You went to Poland to do a master's degree.
Yes, I did.
Which we'll get to. Was there anything in your childhood? I know you were the youngest of three girls, but was there anything there that would suggest that you would go on to be a teacher or anything there that would suggest that you'd go on to be a coach?
So I knew that I wanted to inspire and have an impact, especially when I once watched my mom, who is a teacher.
Mm.
And maybe that's where I got my inspiration from. I remember when I was just a teenager, maybe about 15 years, I'd finished my lessons for the day and I went to her. I remember, you know, observing one of her lessons, the kids, and I was like, wow. They were so intrigued by her. They were just looked up to her. And she was such a great model for them. And the impact...
Was she a general teacher or was she teaching any particular subject? Yeah. What age group?
So she was actually the superintendent for the nursery department. And so she had the nursery children. It was amazing how you could have such an impact on such innocent children and inspire them and see them grow and develop. you know, that you had a role in their lives. And I love that concept. So I was all about inspiring, having an impact. And I believe that's why I initially chose to go into teaching and do my master's in educational sciences. It was about having an impact and inspiring and being a part of somebody's growth. I kind of had that embedded in me from the very beginning.
So, you seem like a very creative person, if you don't mind me saying. You came across very creatively when we chatted on the phone. You were full of energy, very, very upbeat. What other interests did you have outside of, you know, education and teaching?
Oh, you know, I loved performing. I loved dancing and I loved taking part in talent shows. You'd find any talent show, any stage show at school, you would see Veronica there. So I was that kind of humanistic child. When it came to the academics of it, that was a bit of a different story, because that's where I kind of got a belief that I later discovered, which was running my life. It was the belief that I wasn't smart enough.
All right. So yes. Where did that come from?
It came from different experiences at school when it came to academics. A simple example was, we had this oral English test that I was that the class was taking, and out of the whole 30 children, I didn't get the spelling right. I didn't. And of course, the teacher was quite not impressed. So she asked me to see her at break time. So I go up to her and she says, "You need to see, you're going to the vice principal's office."
Just because you got a spelling wrong?
Well, it was because I believe she was not happy with my results. I don't know. At that age, I was around 8 years old. You know, she was expecting more from me, I believe.
Right.
So, yes, I went to that principal's office that time, and she was busy shuffling through the papers and said, "Veronica, go and sit in the corner. So you can't spell." Well, quiet as I was, you know, sat there in a corner, immersed in that confusion of a child's mind. So what? I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. What a failure. And that belief kind of started running my life, because I repeated the year. All my friends went to year 5 and I stayed in year 4. Yes, Veronica, you are not smart enough. I loved performing. I was like always out there. I was the first to, I was that playful soul.
I'm stunned, you know, because I obviously didn't know this part of the story.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was one thing that struck me from my chat with you that initially was, one was this like determination and positivity and the idea of trying to improve, looking at ways, but smartness through and through, you know.
Of course. But you see, and that is just a belief. And there was no truth in that belief. My teacher didn't want me to have that belief I wasn't smart. I don't think she even believed I was smart. I think she believed I was a great student. I'm sure she believed I had potential. And that's why she wanted to shake me up a bit. Maybe not in the right way.
So you don't think there was any prejudice going on? I'm just going to throw
there. Of course. You know what? Looking back in time, because through my transformational journey, because I went through a transformational journey of personal development myself. You know, the fact that I'm so confident right now, and it wasn't always like that.
Yeah.
It is a journey that I went through. So looking back, it was a belief that I kind of started to accept. But it just turned out that was just my own illusion, my own story, my own interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And we have many interpretations, you know, in life, which are just illusions. So the question is, what is true and what isn't? That is the question.
And that's a very good question, which we're going to let people chew on for a little bit while we play the next track, which is, I don't even know if this was one of yours, but I do like this guy. Oh, wow, I can't believe I'm cutting off the Lambada, but it's too hot in here to do the Lambada, isn't it? I've never done the Lambada with my guests before either, and I'm not going to do it while I've got man flu. So we've been, as always, continuing the chat off air, which is the way I like it, because it means that we can bring issues to the fore then. You and I were talking straight out about race and how much of an issue it was that you were mixed race where you were in Ghana. And I'll let you take it from there.
know, Ghana, being mixed in Ghana, the only experience that you would have is some people calling you Obroni. Obroni is, I think, white rice.
White rice. Funny, yeah? A friend of mine used to call me my one and only Obroni.
But you see, the thing is, I never really felt any negative tonation in that word.
Okay.
Personally. I felt very accepted in Ghana. I mean, I grew up, of course, in an international school where I had, there were about 52 nationalities. So I didn't feel any different from my personal experience. So Ghana, I felt that's where my heart is. That's where home is.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt very loved and accepted within the community, within the people. You know, my father's Ghanaian. He's a typical Ashanti man, traditional. So
does he do, your dad?
So he was an engineer.
I don't think you told me that, but I had a picture in my mind of him being an engineer.
Really?
What sort of engineering was he doing?
He worked in a radio station.
Wow, that's freaky.
Yes, the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation, GBC.
Okay, wow. Is that why you've been on radio before? Or?
No, I wasn't on radio in Poland.
Okay.
Yes. So when it comes to race, I wouldn't say I had any negative experiences as compared to Poland, for example.
Yeah. Yes. We'll get to that. Mm. But I'm still laughing at the fact that your dad was Ghanaian Broadcasting Corporation, because, you know, my partner, bless her, I've been with her for 3 years now, but it wasn't until I'd been with her for a year that she told me that her dad was a radio presenter back in Zimbabwe.
Really?
Dangerous place to be a radio presenter, by the way, or a teacher. And so, of course, you originally, when you went to Poland, to do your master's, did you say?
Yes.
And what was that in again?
Educational sciences.
Right, because you were going to become a teacher.
Yes.
Okay, so tell us about that. Tell us about the culture shock, just briefly, because we're going to be going to the ads in 40 seconds. And
yeah, briefly, you know, when I went to Poland, it was like early 2000s, 2001, I believe. And I think I was the only mixed person in my faculty.
Yeah,
that was quite strange for me. But you know, educational sciences is a domain mainly dominated by the women, so there's lots of girls there. So
we got along
quite well.
That's good.
Yes.
Well, look, we'll explore that in more detail, actually, because you know, especially with the language barrier originally.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the ads, and then we're going to be doing a call to prayer, the Azan. So we'll be back after that. Thanks for. No, we're going to carry on our chat, but we're going to have Let's Get It On in the background, because who doesn't love Marvin Gaye? Be the scream here in the studio. You know, I've had all kinds of musicians here. I've had rappers. I've had a reggae artist in the past. I've had people who play different musical instruments. But never anybody as lively as Veronica Owusu-Bichkovka. I didn't get that right.
It was better than the first one.
It was an effort. You know, she was there. She was moving around proper. And, you know, my excuse is, by the way, I mean, I can actually dance very, very well, but with me having man flu today, I'm just chilling out.
Are you just finding an excuse?
It is an excuse. So let's carry on where we were then, yeah? Because you said something really interesting to me, because I think with the current situation that we're in, I mean, certainly I experience it with my son because he's mixed heritage, with some of the attitudes about immigration, the anti-Muslim stuff that's happening at the moment, the xenophobia, all that sort of stuff that's going on. I'm always straight in there with, like, the effect of colour.
Right.
And I said to you, so tell us about Poland. How bad was the racism? But you said a really interesting answer to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I said, if you'd asked me this question 10 years ago, I'd have given you a different answer.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing what I know now, I kind of take a different perspective, okay? People do what they do because of the lack of knowledge, because of the lack of information, basically because of the lack of fear. Sorry, not the lack of fear, because of fear.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, because of the fear of the unknowing. And I see it as a mindset thing. I'm not bothered by it anymore, like I used to.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I just, you know, shove off. It's really, it has no impact or no power over me whatsoever. There are some great Polish people that I met, and I'm sticking to that the Polish people are so friendly, very hospitable, and very open. That's my experience. I've also had, despite the bad ones, I've had also great ones. So I'm trying to put my focus on those great ones, because we're, you know, where focus goes, energy flows, and you get more of that.
I've got to say, listen, you'll go mad at me saying this, but I've got a Polish lodger, right? He's a very private man, but I know that none of our circle will be listening, right? and yeah, some of his attitudes are quite funny, right? But at the same time, that guy, you know, just by the fact that he's been in my house for 2 years, right? I would leave him with my son when my son was just 8 years of age. I would leave him with a baby. I'd leave him. I could leave my wallet lying around. I could trust that man with my life. If he says he'll do something, he'll do it. If I let, you know, if I did him a favor, he would rather die than not fix it and make it even. Oh. Yeah. So anyway, he's been with me for 2 years now. The neighbors probably think we're lovers. And it's gonna be the end of an era. He's leaving on Friday, but he works nights, so I'll be very glad to be able to play music in the morning. We're gonna go to the ads and then the news, and then we'll be right back. Get up, wake me up, Avicii. So welcome back to the Culture Pop, the show that celebrates the people, the culture, and music of the world. And what was it we were chatting about before that you surprised me with? Yeah, we were talking about Poland and Ghana.
Yes,
and I was really surprised by this because I had no idea Ghana was a communist country.
As in the president, the first president, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, he had socialist views, and he was going into that direction of communism, so he was in really good relations with the Soviet Union and Poland during those years when they were communist countries. That's why you know, there were lots of collaborations between Ghana and Poland, and for example, my father was sent on a scholarship to Poland. The Ghanaian government sponsored him to further some his knowledge on engineering, and the lots of Poles came to Ghana. Lots of infrastructure that you can find in Ghana currently were built by the Soviet Union or Poland. So yeah, there was a lot of interaction back in the days when they had similar political views, until of course that changed.
And what was the economy like over there? You know, is there a lot, for example, is there a lot of poverty? The impression I often get when I look at Ghana is that everyone is just getting on with it, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place to live.
So it's not called the developing world for no reason. It is developing, okay, and that's what I think we need to focus more on. It's a developing world, and that's great because there's a lot of opportunities, a lot of possibilities, there's growth, and I keep on saying it, Africa is the future in those terms of growth, because it is ever growing. There are struggles and there will always be, but let's look at how, I love looking at the positives.
And it's great. That's why I brought you here.
I choose to. Yes, and it's not about ignoring the problems or issues that may be going on. Of course not. It's about celebrating what's good as well. Because there's enough negativity. There's enough of that. There are enough people talking about that.
I've been looking at a lot of resilience recently. You know, people are going through hard times for various reasons, and businesses need to be resilient. And I was looking at strategies. A friend of mine, actually, Richard McCann, and a client of mine, we were talking about this, and he was saying his strategies that he uses, and one of them is, it can always be worse. When you realise that, you always consider the blessings of what you've got.
Yes, you know, in my coaching, when I coach, I do really promote a lot of gratitude. Because when we come from a space of gratitude, you know, we are more at peace with ourselves. And we open up space for more abundance from that space of gratitude and being grateful for where we are right now, so that we can open up a pathway to where we want to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think, one, I mean, when I look at my life and I look at what's made me perform better in the world and be happier in the world, one is complete acceptance, because the milk never got cleaned up by crying about it. Yeah. So as soon as you accept, you can move forward. gratitude and forgiveness, of course, rather than beating ourselves up for our shortcomings, or as you were saying to me about what your school experience had been like. You know, you have to, once you realise that, yeah, I'm not perfect, but I can be better.
Mm.
Yeah, I had a guy on here called the Fail Coach.
Oh.
And he went from $15 million in the black to minus $5 million in the red,
right,
with people threatening his life because it was personal debt.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to top himself. He'd had enough. He decided he was going to kill himself.
Mm.
But he couldn't get that right because his mother was still alive. And all the debts were in her name.
Mm.
So that was the point when he said, Miha, you failed. And in saying that, he was then able to say, you failed, but now you can get it right.
Exactly.
And it's only a few years ago, and now he's back in the black again. Yes. By about $10 million.
Was it Andrew Carnegie, the steel industrialist, many years ago, he mentioned something, he said something like this, you know, you can take away our factories, you can break them down, you can bomb them, you know, bring them flat to the ground. Give us 4 years and we shall rebuild. Because it is not what we have acquired, it's actually who we have become in that process. Because if we've done it once, we can do it again.
It's really interesting because I think I said to you, I like to look at, say, the religious teachings and imagine, what's this person saying if you didn't have faith? Because sometimes people don't have faith. So when, for example, for Christianity, Jesus Christ said, you can knock down the temple and I'll rebuild it in 3 days.
Mm.
A lot of Christians point that towards him being crucified and resurrected 3 days later.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the same principle. They can steal your house, they can take your clothes, they can take your car, but they can't take away your potential. But you've got to recognise your potential.
They can't take away your potential. They can't take away the experience that you have acquired during that journey. They can't take away the confidence that you have built. They can't take away anything that you have within you, and that's where your power is. And that's why I'm I'm known very often on social media as the Power Coach.
You are?
Yes.
Yes, I've seen and I know that you coach other coaches to make them more empowered as well, I believe. You're looking very humble there. Or maybe I wasn't meant to say that. But you know, I think that just as people have got that power, even if they've got no money at the time or whatever, it's equally true that you can have all the money in the world, you can have the greatest job potential, you can have a Rolls Royce outside. If you're not aware of your own power inside, you're poor. As Bob Marley said, some people are so poor all they've got is money.
That.
I always like that line. So listen, let's come back to the life story, because I think that's your, what you've done, your journey. I know I've chatted to you in the past about it. It's inspirational. So you did your educational sciences, the master's, over in Poland. And then did you start as a teacher in Poland?
Yes, yes. So that's how I started off teaching.
What age group?
Yeah, so that's this primary sector. So that you'd have from as young as 6 years old, because in Poland they start school a bit later. Up to 11, 12, that's a primary education.
Okay, that's a difficult age as well, isn't it? Because they're very easily distracted.
Oh, yes. And then that's why, you know, lessons are very dynamic and, you know, the pace is very varied. You can't have anything longer than 5 minutes, or, you know, it's about being creative and engaging them. And that, I think, those skills have transferred into what I do now.
I've seen it. I was going to say, because we were talking about your video, your videos that you do on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And you're very good at holding attention, and you know, your videos are on fire, the amount of engagements and comments and likes and all the rest of it. And I think that if you can get a bunch of 11 and 12 to sit still and pay attention for 45 minutes, you can get anybody's attention, can't you?
There is a lot of truth to that, yes. But yeah, so but within that teaching experience, I kind of branched out, because I had this tingling sensation of venturing into the business world, you know, doing something more, being more, because I felt that there was something more I could do. So I ventured into business with two other partners. And that was when I showed signs of low self-confidence. Can you imagine?
You know what? I was going to play a track.
Oh, yes.
But I think we should carry on with that. It sounds meaty to me. So what business was this?
Yeah, so we set up a web development agency where we're doing web development and branding, as well as another company with import-export. We were importing natural, unrefined shea butter and other natural resources that they use in cosmetics. We're importing that from Ghana to Poland to supply the cosmetic companies. So those were the two major businesses that kind of I got involved in. Yeah, so it was during that period that, you know, I was like, I really started, it's that belief I spoke about not being smart enough started manifesting itself. In the form of, I doubted myself a lot in my voice.
Even though you had a master's degree.
Yes. You see, and that is where...
And you were teaching in your third language.
Oh, come on. You see, and that is where that subconscious belief runs our life without even us knowing. But until I wasn't aware of that, it ran my life. Not speaking up when you should be in that environment, you know. Because I told you, I was more of the entertainer. I was kind of the performer. But when it came to these things, I started doubting myself.
And a singer. I read you singing Yellow Man now.
I used to perform on stage back in Poland as well. I used to have be in a dancing group and performing group.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's a different story. Yes, so I never really spoke up when I should have. I never really said no when I felt I could have. And I never really believed in my capabilities as such in the business world. So I let others run the show. Even though I felt that I could have done something or intervened.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually in that very moment where I found myself in, you know, those, what is it called? Where you go sell your stuff, your precious belongings in exchange for money. What are those called? Brokers, or is it?
Oh, pawnbrokers.
Pawnbrokers.
They call them cash converters now.
Oh, do they? Yes. So it was when I found myself in that broker's shop where I realized that, Veronica, is this what your life is going to look like? Because business was going well, but then things started spiraling down after a few years of success. Having that wrong mindset in business and not believing in yourself and following somebody else's dream, not yours, is just doomed for disaster. So I was broke, I was betrayed, and I was broken. the three B's.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in that moment, actually, where I had to step into my power. And that's where the power coach comes in.
What we're going to do then, yeah, we've got some adverts now. So we'll be coming back on air at 16:26 precisely, and we'll do that journey then. Yeah,
yeah.
And we'll enlighten everybody about what coaching is. And here we go. Over to you.
You're listening to your local Asian community radio station, 107.9.
Welcome back to the Culture Pop, the show that celebrates the music, the culture, and the people of the world. You know, I've been doing this for 18 months, right? Mm-hmm. And I still get this sort of, like, when I say that line, I'm like, do I put culture first, people first, or music first? But I got my son to put people at the end, because it's the people that make the world tick. Yeah. But I'm still having, like, this senile moment every time I go to say it. But it's a good job I never did aim to be polished, only ever authentic. And that's how I get away with it. So you were in a business, it was someone else's dream.
Yeah.
And so you reached the point where, because you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, and because they're fleecing you and stabbing you in the back and all the rest of it, you've ended up like in a how did this happen moment in
yes.
a pawn shop,
oh, boy.
Giving away your guitar and whatever it is so you could buy a meal that day.
Maybe not a meal, more about paying for the rent.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a moment, actually, where I heard that whisper. You know that whisper that you ignore? It's like, Veronica, you know, is this what you want? Is this how you want to show up for the world? Is this how you want to show up for your children? Is this the example you want to be
giving? This was like your rock bottom?
This was my moment of, you know, like, what's going on? And the answer was, no, I don't want this. No more. And I think it was in that moment that I literally had a shift. Because it was during that week, I believe, I stumbled upon this audiobook that I believe started my journey on personal development.
It was actually by
Neil Donald Walsh. And as ironic as the title may sound, it was nothing religious. It was called The Conversations with God.
Yeah, we discussed that. It's a great book.
Yes. And it mentioned things about the belief system, the paradigm, your subconscious mind, and all these things. And I realized that, wow, I had created the reality that I was in. I had created that pitfall, literally, through the beliefs I held about myself, not being smart enough, not showing up, not standing up for yourself.
Mm.
I had created that. Wow, that was like transformational for me, because if I had created that, then, hey, I can create something else. Once I mastered my mind, and that was my journey on mastering my mind, I started reading books after books, going back to Socrates and Decretus, all the philosophers.
The Republic.
Yes.
One of my favorite books.
Oh,
it's actually Plato who wrote it, though.
Oh, I see.
I don't think Socrates actually wrote anything.
Well.
It's all right. I'm just being a snob.
No, great to know. And you know, the pioneers of personal development, you know, Napoleon Hill, James Allen. I just started reading and immersing myself in it. I was rewiring my mind, because that's what I needed to do to change things. If I didn't change, nothing else was going to change. And that's where my journey became transformational, and it took a while. I wish I had a coach then. I really do. Looking back, I'm like, whoa, if I had a coach, I'd have become aware of those paradigms, those beliefs.
Fact that you coached yourself effectively.
Ah, well, with time, it took
a
long time.
You challenged those beliefs.
Yes, it took a long time, and I could have done it quicker and more effectively. But yeah, it was my journey, and I needed to go through it. So I made it a mission to do something about my life. and that's where I say coaching found me. And I diverted from teaching into the coaching industry, because teaching is like giving, educating. Coaching is evoking, bringing out, unraveling, unpacking, discovering.
But a lot of teachers find themselves having to coach. Mm. It's like building a house. The foundation's not there. You're building it on sand if you're trying to teach, or you're trying to educate somebody who doesn't believe in themselves, or you're trying to educate somebody who may be getting abused at home, or whatever it is.
So you see, this is where coaching, what is coaching? Okay.
Yeah.
And this is where it comes in. Coaching is a powerful process of raising awareness about yourself, and it's about taking you from where you are right now to where it is that you want to be by making those shifts, those transformational shifts in the mindset, in the thinking, in the mentality, in the attitude, because those are the very things that block us. Those are the very things that prevent us. We have created our own prisons. So coaching, through the process of powerful questioning, deep, powerful questioning, peeling off the layers, clearing the path for abundance to enter, because up till now we are blocking it. We wonder why we're not getting results. Question the mindset, question your beliefs, question your thinking, question your attitude, and you'd find that you are the answers. You are the answer to your own problems, or you have the key to whatever problem you're trying to solve.
It's phenomenal. Your mind really is the universe.
Yes.
And it's weird, you know, because what you were saying there evoked a memory in me. I've always loved Zen, Taoism, and these things. Not as religions, but, you know, I like to have a really physical feeling, understanding of what those philosophies are about.
Right.
And everybody, because I interview a lot of inspirational people in different fields, and every one of them, without fail, has proved to me that they were a master of their mind, which is what you talked about.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk about abundance a lot. And there's a story about a Zen master and an academic, right? And it's to do with beliefs, really, where this academic has heard about the master on the hill, the Zen guy, the Mr. Miyagi type character.
Mm-hmm.
And cynically, he's like, whether or not he consciously wants to catch him out or not, doesn't matter. Mm. He's like, oh, I'm going to go and interview this guy. Let's see what he's made of. So he goes in to see the fella, and the master brings him into his home. Have a seat. Would you like a cup of tea? And you might start to recognise this story as I go on. So, you know, the journalist says, yes, I'd love a cup of tea, thank you. So the master says, did you come far? Goes and gets the cup, puts it on the table. He's got the teapot. And he says, yes, yes, I've come 200 miles to see you. Good journey, I hope. You know, we're not having this small talk. And he starts to pour the tea into the cup. But when it starts to get near the top, he carries on pouring and he's looking at the journalist and continuing with the conversation. The journalist is stuck between looking at the master and looking at the cup and thinking, what the hell's going on? Until the tea starts to overflow off the table onto his knee, wets his suit, and he goes, what the hell are you doing? He says, what are you doing? The tea's got enough, you know, the cup's full. And the master says, exactly, there's no point me putting tea into this cup but it's already full, and you've come to see me and you're already full of ideas and beliefs and academia. Anything I try to give you is just going to overflow over the edge. Mm-hmm. And it's the same, isn't it? That's they're talking about enlightenment, but it's the same principle really. We've got to empty out the cup, mm-hmm, to find out who we are. And I wasn't going to ask you this question, but I think it's quite valid. Mm-hmm. Would you say that when it comes to that journey of self-discovery, yeah, of coaching, that you could say that you find out what you're not first, and this whatever it is that's took you to your point of unhappiness, you know, the 9-to-5, working in the family job, whatever it is, mm-hmm, or not having a job. Mm-hmm. So you dismiss that, and that's like the gross layers, if you like, the outer shell that's rubbish, that's, mm-hmm, causing your unhappiness. But then you get other subtle changes that need to take place where you might be doing something that you're better suited to, that you're naturally more gifted at, but that might still not be what you're supposed to be. Does that make sense? It might still not be your passion. Mm-hmm. For example, I like editing books, but I'm not sure that editing other people's books, yeah, is something I have a passion about, okay, in the same way as, say, speaking on radio. Mm-hmm. Can you relate to that?
Oh, well, you know, it's all about discovering, and able to discover, you have to do. For clarity to come to you, clarity comes through doing. So I believe that the more we try stuff, the more we kind of discover what's good for us, what works well for us, what we're better at. So if you're, for example, doing editing, yes, and it's not something that you really, really enjoy, us with talking on radio, it's something that you've discovered and that you can choose to continue with it or not. Because, you know, the more aware you are of what you like, what you don't like, who you are and what sits well with you, the better you are making a choice on what it is that you want to carry on with.
Yeah, I think sometimes when people at the start of the journey, until they reach that rock bottom, until they reach that point where I really can't take any more of this, something's got to change, I'd rather die than do this, mm-hmm, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Until they reach that point, they are, as you said, they're in prison. Once they start to make the journey towards authenticity, it might be that they're doing something that they're not, you know, they're not going to do forever, but it is more rewarding, it is paying the bills, and, mm-hmm, at least it's a stepping stone towards,
oh, yes,
their true destiny.
Yes, yes, you know, if you hit rock bottom, it's actually a way of pushing yourself back up. Yes, and that's where the transformation happens. But I would say you don't have to be in rock bottom to be stuck. Now, what do I mean? I've come across people, you know, who are successful, but then their success is their very pitfall. What do I mean?
The comfort zone?
Ah, not quite. Because when you reach a point of achievement and accomplishment, that can be your pitfall towards taking your life to the next level, fulfilling your vision. Because you have reached where you are, you have accomplished what you've accomplished, thanks to the beliefs, the ideas, the opinions you have. That's brought you to where you are. Now, if you want to take it to the next level, You have to be willing to fail again. You have to be willing to experiment again. And not everyone is courageous enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're successful and you want to take your life to the next level, you want to have a greater impact, you may have that barrier of success that you're not willing to let go of it. You're clinging to it too hard.
You become like the rich man in the parable.
Exactly.
Who won't put down the bags.
It's become your prison.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get that quite a lot in coaching, because with some of my coaching clients, because they've reached some level of achievements and success, but they want more out of life, in the sense that they want to be more. They want to have a greater impact. But then they're not going to have that greater impact if they don't change certain beliefs that they have, certain beliefs that have brought them success. If they're not willing to make those shifts, because those very beliefs that have brought you to where you are not going to take you to where you want to
be. Very good point. It's interesting. I can relate that to the concept of life after death. That, you know, in terms of Christ's teachings. It's funny, I'm not a Christian, but I was going to be a priest once.
Oh, right?
I think that this is the true meaning of anything to do with life after death, is this idea of complete surrender. For example, the gladiators were so good because they didn't go into the arena to kill somebody efficiently. They went into the arena to die with honour. And so in that submission to the universe that I'm coming in here to die with honour, they would end up winning with glory, right? Because they were prepared to lose everything. Rob Moore, I don't know if you and somebody I was speaking to, Rob Moore's an entrepreneurial property developer, loads and loads of books published. And I think he'd done the longest ever public talk for hours and hours and hours on end, like a record. And he says, risk everything. Or risk something or lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you're not prepared to take a risk. You're stuck. I think it's the same point, isn't it? And I think in life, once you accept the worst possible outcome, that doesn't mean dwelling on the worst possible outcome, because that'll take you there. Mm-hmm. It just, like when I go in the ring, I'm like, yeah, my jaw could get broken. I could get knocked unconscious. I could end up with a blood clot on the brain. I don't sit there and dwell on that, but I'm accepting that risk.
Mm.
But I only then think about winning and what I want to do. That's the same line, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very similar, definitely. You know, and these shifts, because they are breakthrough shifts, they're shifts that are going to allow you to look at things differently. And when you look at things differently, you make different choices. And when you make different choices, you get different results. You can't get different results by doing the same thing all the time. You know, there was, I don't know if I can give an example, there was a case, one of my clients, you know, she had her own business, successful, but then there was a frustration that she was experiencing in her life. She felt she wasn't getting what she wanted. She was frustrated with life, not feeling so fulfilled, and She knew she could do so much more, but she just wasn't getting those results. And when we did the deep, fearless coaching, and the deep conversations, it turned out that there was a belief that she had held within her unknowingly that had brought her success. And it was a belief that came from childhood again. She came from an abusive home, and she made herself a commitment that she was going to become so successful that nobody could hurt her again. And having that belief got her places. But then there was a clashing belief that if I'm too successful, then just maybe somebody may start hurting me again. Maybe then I'll be taken advantage of again. So she was unconsciously preventing herself from thriving and doing so much more better and having a greater impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these are the beliefs and the clashes that go on in our mind without even us knowing. And that's dangerous, because if you don't know, then how can you change?
The mind is very, very clever. Or hoodwinking us. We've got a pro guest.
Yes.
It's a tactic, you know, Veronica. Mm. I disclose, you disclose.
Yes, we do.
That's how it works. We become friends. It's great. Because I, you know, it's like some people, we were talking about coaching.
Yes.
And, you know, when I help people, I don't stick to a definite structure, because some people are not going to tell me unless I tell them, and then they'll start to spill the beans, and then that gives me something I can work with. Mm. And there's other people, I can point them in the right direction, but it's like leading a horse to water. I can't make them drink it, so I have to grab them by the scruff of the neck. So I'm going to be asking you to tell me about the structure of how you help people. But first of all, who do you help, and how can you get in touch with you?
Yeah,
let's make sure we get that out of the way.
Yeah, so, you know, I coach professionals, leaders, visionaries, and people that know that they have so much more to offer, but feel that there's an obstacle that they just can't overcome on their own. And, you know, if it's women or men, but mainly women, of course, that are disempowered for some strange reason or don't feel that they have the power to achieve what they truly desire. And the coaching process is a powerful, deep, powerful conversation where I ask powerful questions that require powerful answers that give powerful results. So I coach a range of people. And the coaching structure starts from creating your vision of who you want to be, what you want to achieve, and where you want to be in life. It's all about you. You are the agenda. I sometimes joke that I don't think you've ever had anybody in your life who's listened to you that deeply before, because that's what, as a coach, a good coach, a great coach, is a deep listener. Listens to what's not being said. Listens to what's being said between the lines. And being able to tap into that. And tap into that. And question and question and question. Until we dig, you know, we dig deep enough to the true you.
I can see this in you, by the way. Because what are, you know, you at home can't see. I'm sitting with Veronica, and you've got a very, very strong presence, you know, eye contact. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, it was very interesting that you said listening to what's not being said, not allowing people to get away, because they will try to wriggle out of it, won't they?
Yes, yes.
And then they can't be helped if they're not going to tell you what they really want.
And that's why I call myself a power coach, because I'm not scared of asking you questions that nobody has ever asked you before. It's called deep, fearless coaching for a reason. Because we're about to make you fearless. And to be able to be fearless, we have to dig deep into and unravel all the layers to the truest essence of your being. Because then you can shine your light to whatever area of your life that needs better results or that you want to improve.
I'm just guessing here that sometimes, you know, ego is the big problem. That sometimes you'll have someone who's come to you for coaching, but they're not going to get anything out of it because they're still caring about what you think, perhaps.
That's where we come very clear on managing boundaries in a coaching relationship. It's about, from the very beginning, making it clear to my clients what to expect, what I expect from them, and what they are going to expect from me. Those expectations are cleared out from the very beginning, so there's no space for that. You know, and then that point you just made may be somebody who's not ready for coaching yet. When you're at a point in your life where you are ready for change and you're aware of the fact that something needs to change now, then you're ready for coaching. That's when we can literally step into your power to create whatever results you want in your life.
So have you turned people away sometimes? If you felt as though you couldn't work with them, that they weren't ready?
Well, I haven't had that experience yet. No, where, you know, I've turned away somebody, because I attract people because I'm very clear on what I offer and what I do. So I make it very clear from the very beginning what I am about, who I am, and I attract such people.
Apologies. You see, I got... V-Power. I was entranced. I'm looking at her like I'm sitting there in my living room with a cup of coffee. Hey, you're in a radio station. Knockdown cheerleader. So, yeah, I'm sorry, cheerleader, by Omi Felix John remix. We're going to have to carry on.
Sure,
so, yeah,
sure.
Go on.
Yes, yes. So, going back to the structure of what the coaching relationship looks like, so it's about getting clear on that vision. Yeah.
Really, okay.
That clarity. Clarity is the key to success.
Talking of clarity, quick question for you. do you start with finding out as much as possible about the current situation, set up with the person, and maybe what's lacking in that way, or where they want to go, or do you play it by ear depending on what you're hearing?
So we don't want to start from where we are right now when we're starting, because that's quite depressing. You want to start from...
Speak for yourself, but I'm very happy.
We want to start from the vision. We want to start from what you want. We want to start about what you dream of. We want to start from that inspirational point where you feel inspired, empowered, and motivated.
Okay.
All right. So we've zoomed into the future. All right. Now we could come back. So where are we at with that? Where are we at with that relation in relation to where we want to be? And then we unravel the blocks, the obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we dig deeper into what's stopping you. I mean, really two questions, really. What is it you want? And why don't you have it yet? What's stopping? You know, and that's where all the unraveling and unpacking are. And that's where the questioning comes in and the coaching comes in. Because as a coach, I find it much more powerful asking the right questions so that you come to the awareness on your own.
Me then giving, it's more powerful.
Of course, yes. If I give you the advice, how often do we receive advice and we don't take action upon it? When a shift comes from you, it's yours. You own it, and you're more, you know, you're more able to act upon it than if I were just to say, oh, this is how it is, and this is what you should be doing. You know, we've got enough advice from around. My job is to get you into your true self, and that's where your answers are.
Brilliant. Well, I've got to say, listen, I experienced this the first time I chatted to you, and I'm experiencing it again, where, how can I make this work for me? I'm going to ask myself these questions. And one, it's a recognition, actually, of how far I've come because of people like you in my life, coaches and, you know, professional mentors and all the rest of it. And as I said at the start of the show, being around positive people, but also a, well, what I've been doing has got me this far. Now I'm going to start exploring further and jumping ahead. Because sometimes all of us need somebody to give us a kick in the backside to think bigger than we're thinking. I could talk to you all day, but what I'm thinking is, I'm mindful of the fact we're going to be going to the news soon. So...